It's 1890, and the citizens of Boston are beginning to go missing in the fog. Police are confused, the public is frightened, and the city is on the edge of hysteria. It's up to the mysterious Smith, inventor and adventurer, to figure out what's going on with the help of his assistant, April Malone. We'll have to face off against the secret society, corrupt policemen, and a mad psychologist hell-bent on dissecting Smith. In order to solve the mystery of what's going on, and to save the city from a more sinister threat, it's The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist, a fast-paced 45,000-word tale of science adventure, written by Andrew Main. And it's available to you for only $1 on the Amazon Kindle store. Download it on your Kindle, iPad, or any major phone, including iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, and Windows 7. Either way, don't miss The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist, available for only $1. Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys, weirdlings and weirdos, which neither one of those is gender specific, by the way. If you want to be a weirdling and you're a boy, you can. Or be a weirdo and be a girl. Totally cool. We don't judge.
Which one?
We got a lot of pushback on that.
Well, we had some disappointment from people who wanted to be weirdlings, but because somebody, and I won't name names, and it wasn't Brian.
Is that a thing?
Said, oh, the one has to be girls, one has to be boys, as they tried to push their gender normative nomenclature upon other people.
Did Justin Robert Young?
This is Weird Things, joined by Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Hello, weirdlings and weirdos of all genders.
And Justin Robert Young.
I want to put those on bathrooms. I'm going further. I'm doubling down on my gender specificity.
Whatever, man. It's your bag. I have a feeling next week a topic we'll be talking about will be the voice recognition, our experiences of that with Siri. And I'm very, very curious to see, because I thought about having a discussion about that today, but probably much better for us to play with it and then find out what our experiences are going to be and our fears for the future. So,
I mean, first of all, let's full disclosure here. We are all three waiting with bated breath for our secret robot lover. We all stayed up until 3:30 in the GD morning to order the damned iPhone overnight. In fact, I called it at 3:30 a.m. I was like, screw you guys, I'm going to bed. And then all of a sudden, there's a panicked knock at the door at like 4:30. And Andrew and I'm like, whoa, what's going on? And Andrew's like, I was like, you can get it through the AT&T store right now. You better just go click on the. And I was like, good night, I'm going to bed.
I was very excited to see when finally 24 hours later, my confirmation email came in from AT&T, that it was at 4:35 in the morning that I finally had made that purchase. Although I really do, in all fairness, and like, I hate to spoil the party, but I really think it's kind of a yawn feature. I mean, babies do this.
What?
Answer questions, you know, like children can answer questions. Why would we care that a phone can?
Tell me you're trolling, right?
I'm just saying that if an 8-year-old can answer your question and get you things and set timers for you, then why should we care that it's on a phone?
My daughter is knocking on the door right now. I will bring her in to answer this question for you. Don't think I won't.
No, I am trolling. I think it's amazing, and I think people are way underselling it, and I completely agree with Andrew that once it gets in people's hands and people realize that 20 to 30% of their interactions with their phones are going to be via voice, especially for people like me and Brian and Andrew, who operate so much of their lives with earbuds in, it's going to be a absolute game changer. And, you know, it annoys me when you see a lot of the second day reaction on the iPhone announcement be, you know, what a disappointment out there about the announcement. And then it goes on sale and it sells a million units, best selling iPhone in history. And the day after that, it's not like, well, we got it wrong. Turns out there's not a lot of disappointment if it sold more than any other iPhone in history.
You know, we'll see. I've been playing around with Microsoft's Tell Me, Google Interactions, Vlingo, and all the other ones. Because I've been very fascinated by voice. I mean, when I was a kid, I bought like a voice recognition module for my Commodore 64 back in like the year 2 to plug that in there, and you'd shout like open, close, and I had a Verbot that I took apart. So I've always been fascinated with this, and I played around with all the other stuff out there, and there is very much a difference between what Apple says is going the way it's going to work, and the true test is going to be when we get it in our head. That's what I'm saying. I'm excited about next week where we can talk about it and say, okay, how is this compared to some of the other stuff out there? Is it going to be just a feature that's kind of cool then we forget about, or is it going to be something we're going to say, you know what, I'm seeing my habits change? So,
well, I mean, number one, I think the outliers are people who are in a position where somebody like me who drives easily 4 to 5 hours per day every single day because I fly into a different city. We grab the show. We throw it in a rental car. Then it's 2 to 3 hours to different places. And like my wife is essentially begging me, like, stop texting, stop tweeting, stop paying attention to anything. You
leave me alone.
You are taking precious cargo from point to point. And you know, we don't like the idea of you getting yourself killed. Like, to her, it was a slam dunk. Like, hey, I'm going to spend $400, and I will not nearly be looking away from the road as much as I thought. And that's important. I think it's very important. I think the contextual awareness. Here's what I think. I think that a lot of what we marvel at with Siri will be a delayed reaction to what most people should have been marveling at 2 years ago with the launch of Wolfram Alpha. I think that's the real engine behind this. The fact that Wolfram Alpha, the fact that you could say, I would like you to multiply the mass of Ganymede times the population of New Mexico, and it'll come up with kilograms people units. You know, I mean, it just understands stuff.
Yeah, Brian and I, you and I, we're both big fans of that. We're playing around because, like, you can ask Wolfram Alpha for, like, a random number, and it'll give you – you can ask it. You say, tell me a joke. Number. It'll give you math jokes that I don't even understand.
Oh, that's so funny.
But in the idea that where this is going, where it's not just a voice thing that goes to a Google search. You know, Google's great at indexing what's been said, but it's not really designed so far what we've seen to calculate and figure out, you know, what you mean. And the idea of a voice system that says – that understands when you say, hey – tell me where there's some good Mexican restaurants. And then you say, you know what? I think I want Chinese. And it knows the thread of the conversation is restaurants.
Right. Well, and keep in mind also, look, yes, we're starry-eyed. Yes, we're excited. But yes, we also are very, very much aware that this will be a first step. But
yeah,
this will be the first step that we remember 50 years from now, assuming any of us are still alive.
Yeah, you know, Brian, you were telling me about a really cool thing that's on the Android, which is a system that is very good at picking up voice from background noise.
Yeah, it essentially it runs, and I feel terrible. I forgot the name of it. I'm sure in the chat room they're screaming it, but we're not looking at the chat room. It's something that's always on, kind of like the Starship Enterprise, where it's always listening, but you call for it. You're like, hey, phone, and then it perks up, and it listens to whatever it is you say next. That sounds very, very exciting. And by all accounts, it sounds like it's got massive, massive benefit when it comes to precision over something like the Siri interface for the iPhone. And there was this moment when I was really bummed. I was like, oh, well, I want that and the contextual awareness of Siri. And then I realized, I'm like, dude, it's the internet. Give it 20 minutes and
yeah,
you'll have
and
both.
Remember, Siri, you know, Siri uses, there's several components to it. One of it is they use the Nuance system for voice recognition, and that's just the system to figure out what you're saying. I mean, just to take the, to put the words into text.
Right.
Figuring out what you mean is the Siri AI component to it, and they can plug in different things into it. Because people are like, oh, Siri's just Nuance. It's like, no, it's not. It's something bigger. You know, it's there's just that little module that says this is the words, but this is what you mean by that.
Well, and that's the part where the partnerships come into play, and the fact that it takes a big company like Apple to be able to put together the partnerships with the Wolfram Alpha and all these other companies who maybe weren't thinking in terms of licensing out their knowledge base, and the fact that, you know, Apple's going door to door knocking saying, hey, you have something that's worth money and we'd like to just start giving you money to use it. I think this is a very important advance when as far as like real artificial intelligence. We spoke in one of our book picks earlier. I talked about the Red Mars, Green Mars, Blue Mars trilogy. And one of the things that happens when that trilogy begins, people are, they all tend to speak English. But by the second book, artificial intelligence has gotten so good at translating, you see this massive fragmentation of language again, to where all of a sudden people could talk whatever language they want, and their artificially intelligent assistants will help them. And I think we are, in a very real sense, entering that next phase of human evolution.
Deidre and Daniel Bell love the podcast, and in turn, they love you. How much? Well, they had their druthers. They'd sneak out of your iPods at night and hug you right in the face, slowly, for about 3 seconds. 99% of you would never wake up, but the 1% that did would look you dead in the eyes and say, shh, peace, love comes at no cost. Thanks for sponsoring the podcast, Deidre and Daniel Bell.
Speaking of the next phase, now we've talked a bit before our new singularity, which is what we like to call SpaceX.
Yes.
And did we cover on the last podcast the reusable rocket system?
We did. We talked about, well, it was fresh with Elon Musk's
Musk
announcement.
Musk was all over that.
Previously, we talked about how SpaceX is planning to make a fully reusable rocket system, which would be 3 stages that each one would land by themselves, which would allow you to reuse this thing like a 747 jet, which brings the cost way, way, way down as far as what your launch is. You're talking to maybe like $10 per pound to orbit, based upon a couple assumptions. So I got curious, and I emailed SpaceX just like, hey, I wonder if they'd answer my questions. So
no
I asked
way.
Them 2 questions because I've watched the SpaceX video over and over and over again. I've been over that website because I am a big fan. And when they show the video, you see what's called the Falcon 9. The Falcon 9 is sort of their straight-up single rocket system, and that's the one that they're going to be planning on launching in most likely January, and it's going to – the Dragon capsule, the Dragon spacecraft is going to go link up with the ISS. Everything working right, we hope.
Right.
But they've got plans on the books, what's called the Falcon 9 Heavy, which is basically like 3 of these rockets together, you know, with like – 27 boosters all together.
Like essentially duct taped together. Like you got this tri-barrel gun with
duct
tape, mini,
exactly,
with mini rockets attached to the side.
It's actually spirit gum.
Yes. Maybe Velcro.
It is
connects.
From space. So you got to do the Velcro.
Well, you've seen that before. Like some of the Ariane rockets, they'll do that. They'll have 3 boosters next to each other. And so that's what the Falcon 9 Heavy is supposed to be. Because when you put that many things together, you get that much more of a launch assist. And when you start, that's when you really start getting your cost savings in launching. Because you're putting up, you're saying that, you know, the way to save money is you build bigger rockets because fuel is cheap. So first question I asked them was, are you guys going to be making a Falcon 9 Heavy reusable if you can? And that's several stages that would have to come back down. And the response was yes, they plan to make all of their rockets reusable.
Wait a minute. Okay, so you're talking about even in the case where they're doubling down on the technology that makes... tripling down. So even taking these... Not only do you have 3 stages per rocket, but you got 3 rockets attached to each other... And then they blast up together with all the ancillary assistance boosters as well. And then they split off to essentially 9 different parts that all computer controlled. No, just go back and
wouldn't be 9. I mean, it would be either 5 or 7 parts.
How's that?
Still, the fact that you got 7 parts flying off, they're like, hey, man, see you guys back at base. And then the robots take it back down. That's phenomenal, man.
Mind-blowing. And I was telling my dad this the other day. I said, yeah, the thing that's going to be cool is we've all gone to see rocket launches. We've never gone to see rocket landings.
Not me, dude. I've never seen a rocket launch, and I'm sad about that. And I have also never seen a landing of anything from space. And for me to be able to see both in the same 7-hour window... How amazing would that be, dude?
Be awesome. So this January, when they go do the Falcon 9 launch, I'm going to plan to go be there. And anybody else out there in the Weird Things world that wants to come join us, I say we do a Weird Up.
We should have our first ever official Weird Up live and in person. Dude, that would be phenomenal. I will come out for that. That would be awesome.
Can I just say that I meant to say Meet Up, and I started to say Weird Things, and I slurred them together to say Weird Up?
Dude, what's funny is I got mad because I thought you went and made up Weird Up without even telling us, and now you're just dropping it on us.
I did, but, you know.
It's a Weird Up. Yes.
Weird Up. So That'd be fun. So I think we could look to do that, because I think it's space has got really, really, really exciting.
Again. And that's the best part, is that sort of it's recaptured the magic of the – none of us were alive in the 1960s to remember the original space race in the 1950s. stop looking side to side, gentlemen. But this is our own space race. This is the one that'll matter to us.
We could, you know, in 5 years' time be seeing a fully reusable rocket system. And the significance of that is, you know, I think things like space elevators we've talked about are an inevitability. You know, once you build those, you make them solar power, whatever, you've got cheap, efficient ways to get. But the idea that we have this thing within half of a decade, we could have a reusable rocket system that gives you space elevator prices. At $10 a pound to orbit, you're talking about the price of a round-the-world first-class airfare ticket.
When
to go into space.
I mean,
what do we figure out? Like, it was like
one of these, hey, wave at the clouds below you as we've crashed back down, but actual orbit.
Well, what did we figure out the other day, Andrew, that it was like the price of a crappy Major League Baseball player, you can go to space? Like, to pay a crappy Major League Baseball player 1 year's salary, you can go to space.
What, you know, Elon Musk talked about, you know, his goal, which we mentioned before, is that to be able to have people move to Mars for the price of the average California home.
I'll tell you what, a lot, when we first talked about that, it sounded idiotic and crazy. And then I watched him give that talk at the National Press Club, and I watched the animation, and I saw the vision of what he intends. And I have no counter argument, and I really do. Like, my optimism for space travel is the greatest now that it's been since I was 13 years old, reading science fiction stories from the golden era of the 1950s, 1940s.
I think it's the most exciting time since we landed on the moon.
Easily.
But imagine what we could be doing if we had only not stopped dreaming.
Right, right. Gentlemen, I have dreaming. A dream.
What is your dream, go. Andrew? Am I naked in it?
Possibly.
Go on.
The choice is yours.
I'm naked in it. It's already decided. Whatever your dream is, Brian appears naked in it.
All right. I didn't really have a dream, but we can go into that.
Can we just pretend that you had a dream? Because I'd really like to think I was in your dreams.
And
Brian, maybe I was watching you a lot longer when I went in to go tell you that the iPhone sales were going on.
It was after I fell asleep, and you're like, you have feisty dreams. You're a wrestler in your dreams.
You're restless. Are you chasing rabbits? So how many apes are there?
Five.
How many kinds of apes? What's that?
Five. There's monkeys, baboons, great apes, King Kong.
No, actual great apes. How many great apes are there?
Well, I'm getting to that.
Right, no, you said grape. You said grape apes.
They're King Kong and Cornelius. Those are the five apes.
Exactly correct. Scientists would say there would be four. You would have humans, orangutans, gorillas, and chimpanzees.
Okay.
Of the great apes.
Can we pull back the curtain a little bit? Because we went to Halloween Horror Nights recently. And
yes. I can confirm that.
Among other things, we talked to the folks who run the Animal Actors Experience over there, and we were talking about the possibility they had a young orangutan who needed to be socialized, and they were like, well, if you want to stop by and visit our orangutan, we'd love to.
We're like, we're busy with Justin at the moment.
Yes. By the way, I would like to point out that
jumping up and down on a suitcase that I had found in the Lost and Found.
Justin was definitely grooming himself right as Andrew said that. I can't confirm that. But here's the thing that and I want to know more about this from you, Andrew, because you're like an orangutan, Brian. Don't you understand? It's not a chimpanzee or you listed off a bunch of apes that would kill you, but for some reason you were cool with orangutans. I haven't heard any of this before. Which orangutans don't like to bite off your fingers? That's a chimpanzee thing.
No, I mean,
only
orangutan. I mean, any ape if provoked will do that. Orangutans are of the ones that I would be the most frightened of. Orangutans, you should be frightened of any large ape, man the most. But Orangutans don't quite have the reputation that they tend to be a bit more gentler, but they can hurt you. I mean, you watch Any Which Way But Loose, and that orangutan's busted loose on people. So I don't want to be like, it's a perfect pet. No, it's a wild animal, and even ones are trained well. But it's the one that I would be like, I'm the least afraid of is orangutan.
Okay, and that's the gist of what I caught from you. So I'm glad to hear that straight from the orangutans.
Yeah, no, I'm out there like, oh, great pets. Oh, put them with your children. They're fantastic. So we have four, right? And then we have, like, you know, there are different kinds of chimps and stuff like that. What if I were to tell you there is credible, possible, potential evidence of a fifth one?
Justin Robert Young.
No, more closer to an ape than to a monkey.
more closer to human, this one is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know,
you have to at least wait 5 minutes between "I'm not a human" jokes. Also, I'm gonna go ahead and yellow card you for lack of originality on that one.
Time
to breathe.
Is this a case where, like, is it a brand new species discovered or a known species that they finally have categorized differently?
It's a cryptid.
Okay.
But it's a cryptid, meaning one of these things that's in the, you know, cryptozoologists say could be out there, but it's the most credible one in my opinion.
So not Sasquatch.
No.
But I mean, who else is there? Like an ape man of Borneo type thing, or
kind of. The Orang Pendek, which is a mythological creature rumored to be wandering around Sumatra, the jungles of Sumatra. Now, in Sumatra, you have orangutans, and I think the northern end of it, you know, the orangutans there. But the Orang Pendek is another rumored wild man, that so to speak, that they claim to live out there. And it's not orange like the orangutan. It's supposed to be maybe 4 to 5 feet tall, walks upright like a man, very broad, very muscular chest, okay? Maybe like brownish fur and sort of a crest from the hair. Kind of looks maybe somewhat gorilla-like. Locals in some places there say that it's a matter of fact. They absolutely say that it's a real thing. They've seen them before. And there's an expedition currently out there trying to find them.
Wow. So, I mean, obviously for a lot of nutty cryptids, even the less popular ones, I mean, somebody ponies up the cash to take a weekend retreat, but this is an obscure location. And it sounds, I would imagine you're talking a decent chunk of change to send out to go look for this thing.
Well, yeah, there's teams, people have gone to look for it before, and there've been researchers who've tried to categorize this thing. And it's one of those things where it's really one of those borderline things. It's in a region that is a very, very dense, hard to get to region. You know, deforestation has unfortunately made it, you know, a little bit easier to get to. And there have been encounters that have been going back, you know, for quite a number of years. And they fit, you know, the descriptions of it fit so well within what we would expect something to be, like an unknown sort of, you know, ape species to be there, that I'm on the fence. I would, if they found it, I wouldn't be surprised that this thing was actually wandering around out there, because it's in a region where it's not like, oh, there's Bigfoot wandering around the Pacific Northwest where you should probably see him by now.
Right.
This is a creature that could probably fit in. Researchers think that this thing is, they've actually got cast prints. When you look at the cast prints of probably what they think are feet and then of hands, they just got hair samples from what they think it is. That they're going to try to get in a couple months' time. They expect to have results back on the hair samples. And the footprints, it's got kind of the very, very, you know, it looks very much like a gorilla or an orangutan-type footprint. Not quite, but it's not like an orangutan footprint, but it definitely looks like something of that. And some people speculate that it's probably might be related to the orangutan, but it's a very, very different-looking creature.
So is this a case where – because this is a fascinating case study to me, because we're all heavily skeptic men of science. I know that you, Andrew, have a background in designing protocol for the James Randi Educational Foundation, and yet we have what on the surface looks like a Bigfoot of another region. Yet from a scientific standpoint, we have a very different situation. And I'm wondering how much of it has to do with the sensationalist nature of Bigfoot here in the United States versus you know, the very and the fact that because of that sensationalism here in the United States, we get a lot of hoaxers doing Bigfoot stuff versus this, a relatively new find in an obscure part of the country that's so tightly associated with an existing wild animal. Like, what? Why is it in your mind, as somebody who has seen both sides, that this seems like a 50-50, like, you know what, I can see this coming out to be a real thing, versus a Bigfoot, where it's you're strongly predisposed to find a highly suspect?
Well, I would, you know, and also it's like, if you ask me, like, do I believe in, like, I mean, like, I don't really believe in Yeti, I want to, but if you said, do I believe in, like, you know, some Yeti-like creature wandering around the Russian tundra, no, but I mean, I would give that more credibility than Bigfoot in the Pacific Northwest or something, but neither of which do I give as much credibility as this. The reason, part of the reason I give this credibility is that is twofold. There are, you know, 30 years ago, we thought maybe there were kind of like two kinds of chimpanzees, and now we've seen like about five different basically like species or subspecies of how you wanted to differentiate them. There's one called the Billy type, they believe is like the Billy chimpanzee, which is behavior-wise is a lot different than other chimpanzees. They were rumored to be these sort of lion hunting chimpanzees that were brave enough to go after lions.
Wow.
And they have in chimp preserves, there actually is one of these they believe is a Billy chimp, and you look at this thing and it is built differently. You go, oh, it's a chimp, but then you look at it side by side with another chimp and you see that it's built differently than another chimp. It's broader, it's way, and you can look this up. And so you look at this chimp and you go, this is a different kind of chimp. You know, we know about, you know, bonobos and common chimps. We realize those are two different kinds of chimpanzees. So now we're finding these other kinds of chimpanzees that, you know, you just don't fit them into two categories. There's broader, and they have very different behaviors. So that's that. And then there may be another kind of chimp out there that's kind of more gorilla-like, even though they're different, related. But, I mean, some of the features seem similar to that. So having seen that, even in areas that we think we know, and we don't really know the Congo, but seeing that happen, if you said, hey, is there some other ape that's maybe 4 or 5 feet tall walking around, and maybe just a few of them left walking around in Sumatra, I'm open to that. That's different than, you know, a 7 foot or an 8 foot tall, upright looking, hairy man to right. some extent.
Well, because, I mean, is there anything suggesting that these are like bipedal or anything? Or that
they're bipedal. Walking? No, they say they walk upright like a man.
Okay.
Like a Justin Robert Young is what they actually said.
I think you're at 2 minutes and 37 seconds.
I'm saying, no, I equated
count
you
that
to a
out,
man.
Folks, and get back to us. But I think you might.
I counted you as.
If you get two yellow cards, you get a red card.
A man. That you're the man. They walk
I'm sorry.
Upright.
Talk to FIFA.
I think we touched a nerve there, Brian. I don't know if humans have the same nerve, but I know we touched a nerve there.
Yeah, the first one for Andrew. He's allowed to do that.
So then also in this region, though, there is reports of these little men, these scary little men that some people have claimed to go around there that, like, have little poison darts.
Like Brian
and
Brushwood.
One of the researchers had talked to somebody who claimed that their uncle was killed by one, which.
What do you mean by little men? Are we talking about, like, pygmies or?
Now you have a little man. Let me find you a reference to this because it's quite fascinating.
Go on.
And by the way, we'll put some links up with the podcast so you can actually see the cast, the footprints. They you know, they were looking, this expedition's in search of this the Orang Pendak, and they found this log where apparently it'll rip open, try to get at bugs and termites. That's the thing about it. It's nothing fantastical about it. And this is a region where people have believe mythologies. You know, one of the problems too, when you want to go look for these things, a lot of tigers in this part of the world. So you got your little camp out and you got to worry about tigers going through there. So trying to find the reference to the so they were told of another creature rumored to inhabit there, the Orang Kardil. Our tiny men are said to be a race of humans around 3 feet tall, quite distinct from the larger simian Orang Pendek, the thing we're talking about. They apparently go naked in the jungle, hairless except for their heads, and hunt with poison bamboo spears. They're notorious for stealing food. In 1981, the person they're referencing and his father and a friend were trading rice in a remote area 5 days' trek from the village. They were traveling, which in that part of the world is probably like a mile. They were traveling through a valley beyond the mountain of Bukit Kandi Alus. All right.
Nice.
And the Batang Asa River. All right, neither have been put on. According to Sahar, the friend killed one of these tiny men who had raided their supply of rice. In retaliation, several Orang Cardil speared him to death.
He's killed a midget.
Well, you know what? You know what part of the world this is near?
Midgetopia?
The island of Flores.
I don't know what that is. What is that?
Remember the Homo Florensians? The little tiny men, the hobbits?
Oh, yeah. Holy cow, they killed a hobbit.
Maybe.
That ain't right.
And the hobbits killed back.
Look.
I just don't take no jive.
Let me, ladies and hobbits of the hobbit world, as
okay,
a
hobbits
human.
Hobbits can be boys and girls. I just want to let everybody know.
Okay, hobbits and hobbitlings. Hobbos and hobbitlings. It's as the representative for humanity. Let's all just get along. You don't need to. We don't want a race war here. Look, I understand that it was.
I would
not
love
right.
it if that was your Bono cause, Brian. Just like, in the middle of your show every night, you just say like, "Hey, everybody, we're having a lot of fun here, but do you know that once every 10 years somebody kills a hobbit in Sumatra?"
Yes. I'd be like, do me a favor.
Little man in a tiny sphere. You
everybody.
Come near me, you don't have to fear.
Everybody, I need you to text Hobbit to 40404 and you'll receive Hobbit updates.
And we're like, and he doesn't use drugs.
Exactly. With just a little help, you can help save a Hobbit.
It was just like, oh, this is a bit, but it goes like way too long. And I'm like, seriously, this hobbit. All of a sudden it becomes this conspiracy theory thing when I pull down my giant Weird Things background with all the lines associated to everything. Like, look at this. See this guy over here got killed by this guy. This guy, hobbit. This guy, cryptid masquerading as a human. This guy over here, Andrew Main. I had to change the punchline to avoid a red card.
Hey everybody, what do you say we take a little time out of our day to wish Jonathan Jansen a happy birthday, Jonathan Jansen's birthday on the Weird Things podcast, you say? It was October 12th, so go ahead and wish Jonathan a happy birthday. Just yell it out. You could be on the bus at work trying to breastfeed your child, just scream in the nearest person's face. Happy birthday, Jonathan Jansen.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is time we send those two great explorers on an adventure of exploration and discovery.
Go on.
I introduce you to first, he may look like Brian, but this name of this famous explorer is?
Fernando.
Justin, give him a name.
Oh, go ahead, Justin.
His name is Ferdinand.
Ferdinand what?
Oh, Ferdinand Steel Thighs.
Ferdinand Steel Thighs?
Yeah. It's actually pronounced Stilfus.
Well, I mean, that's how I prefer it. It's like in grade school, I heard the Steel Thighs thing quite enough. Thank you.
And, Brian, who is this other gentleman?
That's Ferdy. Not short for anything. He was just named Ferdy when he was a kid. LaDouche is his last name.
Lettish.
All right.
It's a Flemish name, Lettish.
Lettish. Yes, Lettish.
Ferdinand and LaDouche, the famous explorers. Gentlemen, I want you to visualize, if you will. This is just a little precursor. This is to test your observational powers. I want you to imagine that you're hiking through the mountains, let's say the Rockies, and you come upon a cave on the side of a hill. And you take your flashlights. You step into the cave. And you see signs of a bear. You smell, you see bear fur, you see claw marks from the bear. And then you look and you see a deer skull. And next to it, another deer skull. And then next to that, another deer skull and another deer skull and another deer skull, all lined up in a row. What do you assume?
Ferdy, I believe.
Yeah, I think there's a bear killing these goddamn deer.
Yes. Yeah, what with it being a bear cave and there being bear tracks here and there being the common prey of bear all around us, I don't know about you, Ferdy, but I'm going to say bear. Ferdy?
But in the middle of this cave, they're lined up in a row.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's weird that he's organizing them like a 60-year-old woman in a curio cabinet. But I'm definitely going to say it's a bear killing the deer.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a meticulous bear. A meticulous bear, if we want to be fancy about it.
Are you bothered by this at all?
I'm more bothered by the fact that we are in a bear's lair than anything else.
Yeah, I am bothered by the OCD habits of this bear. I feel like he definitely needs to maybe see a professional about that.
Can he make any assumptions about this?
Higher intelligence, you'd assume, if he's being weird and organizing it and sees a value in patterns and is decorating this kind of pattern.
Now, Andrew, is there not other? I seem to feel like there's a number of tales of animals that are peculiar in that they want to arrange certain things, right?
Not gonna happen.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I'm much more concerned about the bear part than the organized part. Like, I'd rather
you're fearless explorers, Brian. Don't be afraid of the bear.
I think you're more worried about the fact that the bear is murdering living things and not, like, as if it was like a gummy bear, like that, like, you know, drank gummy juice and bounced around the forest. Like, you wouldn't be all upset. But this is obviously something that murders deer and then arranges it meticulously.
Well, and it's like, if I have to choose between which I'm more disturbed by, the meticulousness or the bareness, I'm going to go with I'm more disturbed by the bareness being inside the bear's.
You've got a gun, for crying out loud. You're the worst explorer in the world. You're worried about a bear. You've got a shotgun, and you're still crying about the bear. The bear's gone.
But see,
the bear,
Andrew, what you don't understand is that Ferdinand, this was not an expedition to find a bear. It was an expedition which was officially listed when we got our university grant as, I don't know, just because.
So, all right. So Ferdinand has absolutely no scientific curiosity whatsoever that these deer skulls have been suspiciously lined up in a row. LaDouche sees something interesting there. He's like, wait a second. I've seen bears. Oh, have I seen bears? But I've never seen a row of skulls lined up like this. And you are now like, hey, this is a smart bear.
That actually sounds like a James Taylor song.
I've seen fire, I've seen bears. I ain't never seen a line of deer that scares.
All right, next scenario. And I'm getting somewhere, okay?
Okay.
Not very well.
Totally separate. Separate scenario.
Okay. No, I'm trying to build towards something here, Brian, and you're not going there, but we'll try anyways.
No. This is like a smash cut to a different.
Does this involve the flashlight? Because Brian would really like to know.
I would really like it to involve the flashlight. Okay, it's a dark place, right?
Brian, you hear a sound by your garbage, okay? You hear your cans, okay? Justin and you are sitting on the porch drinking beers. There's a sound. Excuse me, you and LaDouche are sitting on the porch. You hear a sound. You're drinking your Citroen, and the garbage cans are knocked over. You go right out there, and you see a wild dog with a bone in its mouth stolen from your trash can. All right? And it runs off into the woods, but you chase after it with your flashlight. Okay? You go into the woods, and you come into a clearing, and the dog puts the bone down, and then it runs away. And you look.
Let me look at this bone.
But you see there's a bunch of bones there, Brian, and they're arranged in a pattern. The pattern looks like a dog.
Wait. Whoa, hold on. Now you're getting creepy. Okay, so you got random bones, and they're arranged in what looks like a skeleton.
Like a dog, like an outline of a dog's body, yeah.
Okay, like somebody killed a dog and then reassembled all the pieces is what
I'm... like a dog used dog bones to draw, like, a Snoopy head or something.
That's not what animals do. Animals don't arrange patterns symbolically.
How do we know this, Brian?
I mean, I'm saying the evidence to date indicates that that's not something that happens.
Did we lose Justin?
We may have lost Justin, and I'm trying to cover it up and call him back.
Did he run out of the forest? He was so scared when he saw this pattern.
He may have run because he was scared of a lack of bandwidth, but we won't know that. You want me to pause everything here, and we'll try to...
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, all right. Well, here, I'll leave it recording, but I'm calling Justin right now. Do you want to have an intermission where we can look at the chat room and people can chime in? Or what? Justin!
Yo.
Justin, I know that was scary, but you don't need to...
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes.
We can hear you.
Can you hear us?
Hold on, Justin. Yes. Look into my eye. Look over here.
Well, I'm looking at you.
Your eyes aren't dilating. I think there's something wrong.
You're going to be another 20 hours before you give birth.
Yeah.
Your eyes are dilated to 3 centimeters.
Okay. I failed on my mute button there. I'm sorry.
That's all right. All right, so where are we?
You're in a forest clearing, and you look down, and you see a pattern of bones arranged in an outline of a dog.
Now, okay.
The dog has gotten a bunch of bones and has now shaped them to look like a dog.
Now, when you're talking about a dog, do we mean a dog skeleton, or do we mean the outline of a artistic representation of a dog?
Artistic representation.
Well, that's animals don't do that. Humans are the only ones.
What do you mean they don't do that, Brian?
There's no, as far as I know, recorded instance of animals doing that.
Dogs don't make no art.
Yeah, dogs don't make no art.
Brian's fond of saying.
That's what I told my dog the other day. In fact, whenever the dog barks, I was like, "You ain't singing. Dogs don't make no arts." And I argue with my dog, and he sits there looking at me awkwardly.
So, you're weirded out by this?
A little bit. Now a little bit, because I'm not scared of being eaten by a bear.
I want you to imagine... You're walking along on what used to be the floor of the ocean, okay?
Wait, has the whole world dried up?
No, parts of the earth are now above water that used to be below, that used to be ocean, okay?
All right.
You know, you're living in a waste, what used to be like, there used to be like a big sea where your house is now, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're walking along, and you see... You see a vertebrae, right? You look down, it's
just
a big
naked
vertebrae.
No animal encapsulating it.
It's fossilized, okay? It's a fossilized vertebrae of an ichthyosaur, okay? Which was imagine a reptilian, a waterborne reptilian version of a killer whale. And that's kind of what an ichthyosaur was like. Okay?
All right.
Breathed air, water reptile, giant, 45 foot long, very, very big, very, very frightening, okay? Basically equivalent of a sperm whale, basically, like the Triassic version of that. And you see a number of these vertebrae arranged in a pattern.
Andrew,
laid out next to each other.
Look, I don't wanna overstate this, but if you tell me that all three of these scenarios actually happened, and that it's a repeating pattern that we see in nature that defies all probability and explanation, I will freaking freak out, because there's no way.
No, Brian, I'm not going to tell you that.
Thank goodness.
In your face, Ferdinand.
All of these vertebrae are laid out, Brian.
Yeah.
All right. Now, here's the thing. You know this about octopus. You know octopus like to lay out shells. Dak, that thing I told you about the deer skulls?
Yes.
Octopuses will do that.
Oh, okay. My God.
Now, we don't have an example of an octopus doing a self-portrait, but these vertebrae of the ichthyosaurs, okay, these big, huge 45-foot-long ocean predator, frightening thing. Millions of years ago, lived there. One of the nastiest, biggest things in the world. Apparently, something was catching these, killing these, and then laying their vertebrae out in a row.
Let me tell you, there's something to... I correct me if I'm wrong on this, but my suspicion at this moment is that the octopods are the most aesthetically sensible living organism among in the entire sea. Like they have the ability to camouflage themselves to look like other, you know, other textures. They essentially have pixels on their body that they can make any color. They have a very keen eye to match surroundings. And now you're telling me that they will arrange their a living room with IKEA like bones?
They keep gardens in the shade.
This is the freaky part. Okay, there's a researcher. Okay, now this is a he's making the claim, and it is an audacious claim. Okay, he is stating that because of the way the pattern they saw these vertebrae arranged was organized, you know, by an animal, we'll call it intelligently, to resemble the tentacle pattern of perhaps an ancient giant octopus. The thing that killed the ichthyosaurus left this as a representation of itself.
Okay, that seems... Actually, I don't know. I was about to say that seems silly because that's not how he would see himself. But then I think about it, and I just made the case that octopods are aware of their environment. They know what everything looks like. So clearly, an octopus would see its long, tentacly arms... And I almost could totally see that.
They are something, right? Like, yeah. They have some kind of sense of self, even if it's not, you know, a photorealistic concept.
Holy crap. This is... I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think I totally believe this. I think I could totally see a world where a half-sentient octopus would have this compulsion to make a representation of itself around the corpse it killed. That's awesome.
This is, you know, we're talking, you know, over 100 million year lifespan. I mean, 100 million years of evolution. And that's always been my argument is, like, if we're looking for intelligent life, we need to find some example of it having existed here on Earth before I'll credibly believe that we'll find intelligent life elsewhere. And that doesn't mean we have to find ancient civilizations, but octopuses making carvings, you know, some smart bird type thing that's, you know, made some sort of patterns or something.
And think about this, though. Like, think about how much of what we perceive as the artifacts of our intelligence are only possible because we happen to have prehensile digits, you know, 10 prehensile digits. We happen to be above ground. We happen to be air-breathing mammals who are able to travel or whatever. Like, I don't care how smart a whale you are. You will never develop space travel as a whale. There's no physical way. You can't make a rocket. You can't blast out of the rocket up on the surface. I mean, there's no... I mean, not without evolving into a completely separate being, right? So it's like...
Yes.
Yeah, like,
or the advent of whale rockets.
Whale rockets.
Elon Musk's next big goal.
Hey, man.
I'm going to fly a whale to Saturn.
Hey, man, is that whale rock? It will turn it up.
Might have gotten another yellow card just for that joke.
What? Whale rocket. Point is, it could be like, if what you're looking for is evidence of intelligence, you are so limited because you can't write in water. You can't build machinery that works in water. I mean, it's like,
well, Brian, let me play devil's advocate to you there.
For the whales. Hello. Yeah. His name is Andrew Main, counselor to the whales.
All right, Brian, hold up your hands. This is your other hand? All right, now. Do you use a watch? What do you use to tell time?
My cell phone.
Put your hands down.
My cell phone. Cell phone.
All right, go ahead. Take that apart for me right now.
I could take the case off of it.
No, but could you take the phone apart for me right now?
I mean, it would damage the phone irreparably.
No, I mean, could you do it? No, take it apart without damaging it. Could you do that?
Oh, I would need tools to do
tools.
Yes.
What kind of tools would you use, Brian?
Tools with a finer precision than my own fingers are able to create.
Sharp, pointy things, maybe?
Yes. Yes. Definitely.
Ever seen a bird use like a piece of bent coat hanger or whatever to fish something out of a bottle?
I have not, but
it happens.
Assume that happens. Yes.
It happens.
Okay. So you're saying
in defense of the whales, you know, they might be able to, you know, grab a piece of bone or do something to.
Okay. But there is
Look.
We have built a rocket.
I don't know why you had to be talking so much junk on these whales, Brad.
We have built a rocket with our
whales. Why don't you go swim a little more? Why don't you eat some more krill, idiot? We're going to be flying around in space cars. Woo!
We have we have very precise digits that are able to accomplish. They got a mouth. Like, even if they started with a stick and manipulated everything with a stick, how on earth would they ever get to the point where they would, that they could get to, like, cybernetic implants to control robo-water robots?
Well, they've got other capabilities. You ever seen, like, the porpoises playing with air bubbles, like, in the tank, like, making these rings of air?
Yeah.
I mean, it's spooky. So you think about this, you go, okay, you know, what could, and they could tell metals apart. They've got, like, electrical fields. You know, I don't know. I think there's probably a reason it never happened. But I'm just saying is that I am hesitant to sort of go because we have a very human-centric way of looking at how we would build things or do things. And, maybe they train octopuses. I don't know. I think you're right. But I think there's something to the idea of going, you know, how would you do this if you had to work in a different way?
Yeah, okay. Well, first of all, I think you're 100% right that you should look to the past for evidence of alien intelligence right here on Earth or non-human intelligence right here on Earth. But it's going to be so tough because the sea is brutal. Even if they carved a giant stone dolphin, I mean, the sea is so relentless in the way it pummels everything, it'd be long gone by now. And it's like the fact that you could find anything is would be amazing.
Oh, I agree. But another thing to think about, too, and it was always an idea I wanted to use for a story, is you think about how ants will use aphids. Ants will actually farm, get these little insects to go out there that they'll milk, that they'll, you know, cultivate. And, you know, I always had this idea, what if, like, you know, 20 million years ago, you know, a talking whale popped its head out of the water. And I was never thinking about whales, but, you know, popped its head out of the water and says, hey, you there, you pink monkey, I can give you a very big fish, but you got to do me a favor.
Now, that would work. Yeah. It would certainly work with this guy. If
why are dolphins so friendly, Brian?
Wait a minute. Are you saying...
Don't.
Are you proposing that all dolphins... Man, I'll tell you what. Let me just ask this. So I don't think we've ever discussed this before. What is the smartest non-human creature on Earth right now?
That's hard. I mean, that is a...
African gray... Is my
African gray is absolutely very smart.
Dolphins.
What's that?
Obviously, dolphins. You and I both said at the same time.
Smart.
Yeah. Chimpanzee.
Chimpanzee is pretty smart.
Smurf. Whale. Smurfs yeah. is not. That's a children's television show.
Some people, and I don't know if I agree with this, will put an octopus up there too.
Octopi are freaking smart, man.
Some people go like, look, they can open up objects and things like that. Well, like, yeah, but they also have to open shells to eat. You know, it's not like doing that sort of an unknown task for them. Like, why would I ever need to wrap my arms around this and pull it apart?
How do you explain their ability to predict the World Cup?
There is that. Did you see the video of, you heard about this? Okay, mystery time. This is awesome. Okay. So you've got this aquarium, big, huge aquarium. And in your aquarium, you have, I think they're called dognose spiny sharks. It's a shark that's kind of a fierce shark. And it actually has near its dorsal fin, has like some spines, has some sharp spines that come out. It's not a cuddly shark. Not all a cuddly shark at all.
By the way, real quick, what would a cuddly shark be?
Name rays, one. Rays are pretty nice.
What's that, Justin?
Rays.
Jabberjaws.
Jabberjaw is
like,
a very
you
cuddly
have, like,
shark.
You go to like a sea aquariums and they'll have like petting... shark petting zoos where you can pet rays and stuff.
Oof.
Crazy. They're pretty neat. They have these sort of big silly looking faces that come up and they look like dogs, but I mean they're not, but you can pet them and they're like, "Boo, thank you." It's exactly what they do. Okay, so here's the mystery for you, okay? You go in there, you guys show up one day, Fernando and LaDouche, and there is a dead shark just like limp in the water. I'm doing a limp shark.
very incredible. Also, I want to point out,
everybody knows that limp sharks, they got kind of a, like they had a stroke.
You got a limp shark, right? Mouth. And you're like, all right, maybe it has some sort of spasm and it died. So you pull it out of the water. Couple days later, you come in there, another dead shark. And you're kind of looking like, this thing looks like got into a fight with something.
Go on. Well, sharks are weak. Everyone knows sharks get their ass kicked by all the other sea creatures.
They're kind of all talk sharks.
They used to call them talky sharks.
This was a mystery to this aquarium because they're like, well, the sharks are like the meanest predators in here. Why are our sharks dying?
They're dying of pride. They were busy.
I like to call sharks the Biff Tannins of the sea.
They were busy flexing for each other, and then they both died of how awesome each other's shark abs were.
Do you think like maybe they tried some stupid shark stunt, some jackass shark stunt?
They were doing.
They got on the other one's like back, and they're like trying to put him out of the tank, and he fell overboard, and like, oh no, they can't know we're getting out at night, and they had to like go get the other shark back in there, but his neck was broke.
They were doing lines of like.
This is a very tragic jackass stunt.
Yes.
Any ideas? Any ideas?
So sharks just keep dying in this aquarium, and they're the meanest thing in there.
Ferdinand. Ferdy LD. Listen. I suspect that these sharks are trying to show off, but they're not very bright, and that they're running headfirst into the edge of the aquarium and knocking themselves out, killing themselves.
That is a great, great idea. They're like, I'm going to make it. I'm going to break us free. And just because, like, I'm going to kill those pink, squishy things. I want to eat them. And so, like, they're just, like, swimming right towards and go, bam, right into the wall.
Right. That's my idea. Ferdy LD?
It's Lesh. I'm going to say they both got really, really bored and decided to make out until they died.
They died separately, though, different nights.
One made out until he died, and the other one felt guilty, so he tried to make out with himself until he succeeded with death as the final consequence.
I like Ferdinand's theory better, but let me tell you what they did. They said, you know what? Something's killing our sharks. They put a video camera in there, and you see this spiny shark swimming around, and you see, I think it was a Pacific octopus, which like looks like coral.
It's very
well camouflaged. Pacific octopus, the shark comes really, really close, wraps its tentacles around the shark, pulls it in, and just crushes it.
Oh, my God. Dude, freaking octopus killing the sharks?
YouTube, shark versus octopus.
Should I do that right now?
Do it right now.
Okay, hold on. YouTube.com/shark.
Now, where did this happen, Andrew?
In an aquarium.
Okay.
Okay, I've got...
We have no idea like when this happened.
I've got multiple mega shark versus giant octopus trailer. I assume that's not what you mean. I assume you're talking about shark versus octopus from 2007.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, hold on. Let me see if I can see what I can find here. Some National Geographic business right here. Hold on.
Here's a giant Pacific octopus in an equally giant aquarium tank.
I'm seeing a big aquarium. I'm seeing fish going around, and it kills me that I'm actually. That I actually know. Wait, was that? Okay, we got a shark going along. Everything's cool.
Hey, I'm just hanging out. Look at me. I'm Mr. Shark.
I'm going to flex for my buddy shark, and we'll see who's got the biggest shark abs.
Let's try running for the window.
No, apparently that's not the cool thing. The cool thing is...
What we need here is the donut, donut, but like a new theme.
All right, so I'm watching...
Yeah, meanwhile, this octopus is just kind of creeping his way on out, slowly but surely, like a deft ninja with death on his mind.
This is a big shark, by the way.
Yeah, dude, and this is, when you said spiny, you're right. I mean, this octopus, it looks like a piece of coral.
No, the shark. Look at the shark's fins. There's actual little spines on the fins.
Sharks and octopi in the same tank.
Oh my God. Okay, so I guess this was a no-no. Don't put a
this
shark.
This is the kind of shark that Eric Roberts would fight on Sci-Fi Channel.
This is a okay. So I think here comes the part. Here comes the part.
Laying in wait. Here sharks we go. Kind of going. I'm the top of the world, Ma. Right.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. They're highlighting the spines on it. They're all talking up how big and bad a predator it is. And then all of a sudden, get ready. Go limpy.
The octopus looks like Star Trek Season 2 villain.
Yes, in that he looks like a human with a bunch of curdly stuff stuck to his forehead.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
All right, so here's...
Wait, whoa. Oh, he snags him with the tendrils. That's unreal. And the tendrils just wrap around, and he can't go anywhere, and he's just flailing around. Oh, my God. That is brutal. That is brutal.
Jogged was like, I'm going to show you how things work on this prison yard, bitch.
And then it didn't work out that way. This is maybe that's what they do in the tank. They're like, first day in the tank, you got to pick a fight. And he's like, there's nobody to fight but the shark. They're like, well, I guess you're going to kill yourself a shark. Otherwise, you're going to be the tank's bitch.
I just feel like you're just waiting for the shark to tap out. Joe Rogan should be screaming. You
know? Holy cow. But it was all to the sharks. And he's just sitting there eating them. That's brutal.
Now we know what sharks are afraid of.
Man, I'm back.
He's just dragging him back to his
lair.
Back to his little hovel like a serial killer would a woman of the night.
A woman of the night.
So, a gazillion years ago, when the ichthyosaurus thought it was the top dog of the sea, swimming around. Look at me, I'm a reptile, but I'm in the water. I own the water.
Yeah.
Except you.
Not so much, Pico.
Then all of a sudden, some giant kraken, we might as well call it, that's what they were talking about, kraken.
Dude, it really is. Thing,
murderizes it on a regular basis, and then is like, I'm going to build a throne out of your skulls and sit on it.
I'll tell you what. It really does. It turns, like, the fact that there's an artistic bent to octopi makes them like the Dexter of the animal kingdom.
Yeah. You know, and like, you know, we don't fear. So, I mean, it's like, what, 200 million years ago. So, we don't fear. Like, I mean, octopus, like, you know, you watch a Captain Nemo, the movie or whatever, and you're like, octopus, like, you want to watch out for. But, you know, divers will tell you, like, you got to be careful with them. You know, they're like, you got to, like, pull their suckers off. But, you know, we don't have as much of a fear for them as we do sharks. But I think we form an alliance.
With the octopus or the sharks?
Yeah. With the octopus.
No. I'd rather be on the – look, if a shark loses to an octopus, then that means I'm on team shark because I don't want to be on team better than a shark.
Who do you want to have in your back?
The underdog.
You want the creature that we just got its ass handed to it by an octopus to be your backup.
Yes, because that means that octopus is more badass, and so I want no more octopus. So I'm on team shark because we know how to handle shark. What we do is we have media hysteria, and then they leave us alone for a few more years.
So Justin, you're saying you're like spreading rumors. You're calling into Panama Beach saying, my baby just got eaten by an octopus.
Yes,
and then
exactly.
Meanwhile, it's the summer of octopus.
Exactly. We need a summer of the octopus. Look, here's what I'm saying. If the octopus really is the greater threat to me personally, then that means I'm on team shark and me plus shark.
But they're not killing us. They're just creeping around the sea, murdering other things like psychopaths.
Like, Brian, I'd like to see how you do your football picks.
Okay, here's the problem.
Oh, the last name's Manning? No, I don't want him on my team. He's too good.
No, well, I'll take him down. But the problem is I'm not playing against Manning, right? So it's like, so here's the thing. I can conceive of no future where a shark dons a shark bubble breathing apparatus and comes walking onto the surface to enslave me. Pretty sure I could totally see that with octopi.
So I'm saying let's make friends now.
No, I'm saying let's destroy them now.
I say we
destroy them.
We put our octopus, his little octopus spacesuit. He comes on board and we say, hey, see our pet dogs, see our cats, see how we get along and we're all friends. Maybe I'll be curling up in your lap. I'm okay with that.
No way. Look, I very rarely go to the people listening to ask, are you on team up with the octopi, or are you on team join the sharks to destroy the octopi?
Join the losers, sure, Bri.
No, join the losers to destroy the winners. Combined with the sharks, we can destroy the octopi forever, man.
Yeah, you and a shark, that's how many arms and legs?
I do want to point out that only one of my co-hosts is advocating genocide of a species.
It's me. The other one's, you know, advocating some kind of horse apples, like, you know, convincing them to be our battle thralls or something. That ain't gonna ever. Well,
he's just covering his bases. Might be a time where we this is need the same to guy, be friends with some octopus.
This is the same co-host that you're talking about who instantly folds over anytime a supernatural alien shows up and asks for people to represent him.
He does kind of bend the knee pretty quickly.
Survival, gentlemen. Survival.
It's pretty much within the first 5 minutes. He's like, well, I for one welcome our new eight tentacles.
See, that's
overlords.
The problem. No, we got to take down the octopi. Octopi are the number one threat, which means we need to shut them down.
We don't need to kill them all.
Okay, think about this. Yes, we do. Listen to me.
How many people died in octopus attacks last year?
None.
Brian, we got to take the fight to their homes. We can't just wait to be attacked. We need to take a preemptive underwater strike and kill them. Eight bullets for each octopus, one bullet per tentacle.
Okay, here's what I'm saying, right? Which do you want to see?
Let's give sharks guns. That's Brian's strategy.
No,
per shark.
No, listen, I have this gorgeous vision of humans riding sharks with giant harpoons into the sea, and the sharks, they plow us up to the octopus, and we blast them through, and then the sharks eat them from the inside out, and we explode them, and it's gorgeous, and it's beautiful. Not some kind of weird, like, let us befriend our biological threat enemy. That's not, no. No,
Brian, I'm just saying, like more people have been killed by sharks than octopus, and you're ready to just bend on over and be like, all right, sharks, we get it, our bad, now we're going to come in closer contact with you.
I'm saying, which one, okay,
this
understand,
it's not a threat.
Here's your mistake, is you're trying to domesticate the superior species. They're smarter than you.
I'm saying they may domesticate us.
They're smarter. No, exactly. And that's why do you want to be domesticated? Don't you want to fight the oppressors? Come on.
I'm saying, if I don't have a choice in the matter, do I want to be somebody's house cat or do I want to be their food?
I would rather go down fighting. Let the record show that Brian Brushwood would rather die riding a shark with a harpoon in hand than die the pet of some octopus.
I would rather welcome our octopus overlords and triumphantly venture off into space and conquer the rest of the universe because it's Earthlings first and octopuses are Earthlings too, than be fish food for a shark that will turn on you any moment it can to devour you.
Dude, you know what? Your dog will turn on you any moment it can. Your dog will eat your corpse the moment you stop breathing. Whatever, man. Let's do the same thing with freaking sharks.
Dogs will wait longer than cats. We'll just point that out.
Oh, dude, cats will eat you while you're alive.
Yeah. Justin, do you care to weigh in on this?
No, I'm going to stand a neutral third-party observer and remind everybody weirdthingsmail@gmail.com if you would like to weigh in on either Team Andrew or Team Brian on whether or not this shark-octopus feud to see how it resolves. I'm sure we'll get a lot of very interesting solutions on both sides of the fence.
There's a section on Wikipedia on octopuses as pets.
And what does it say?
Though octopuses can be difficult to keep in captivity, some people keep them as pets. Octopuses often escape, even from supposedly secure tanks, due to their problem-solving skills, mobility, and lack of rigid structure. It sounds like us.
They need to be killed. They need to be killed. I am on Team Shark, unequivocally. Shark, you understand.
Variation in size and lifespan among octopuses makes octopus species makes it difficult to know how long a specimen can naturally be expected to live. that is a small octopus, maybe born, maybe just born, or maybe an adult, depending on its species. By selecting a well-known species, such as the California two-spot octopus, one can choose a small octopus about the size of a tennis ball and be confident that it's young with a full life ahead of it.
Shark.
So you can send it off to school.
Sharks, you know what's on their mind. They're like, seal? Seal? Is that a seal? Can I eat it? Can I eat it? Oh, I can't eat it. That's not a seal. I can't eat it.
How cool is this? Octopuses are also quite strong for their size. They're known to open up the covers of their aquariums and survive for a time in the air in order to get to a nearby feeder tank and gorge themselves on the fish there.
Why do you want to support this team? They're little they're the humans of the sea, and I am not in favor of anything that has a chance to replace me on the evolutionary totem pole.
I just clicked on a link called Octopus Wrestling. Oh my god! Octopus wrestling involves a diver grappling with a large octopus in shallow water and dragging it to the surface. An early article on octopus wrestling appeared in a 1949 issue of Mechanics Illustrated. Octopus wrestling was most popular in the West Coast of the United States during the 1960s. At that time, World Octopus Wrestling Championships were held in Puget Sound, Washington. The event was televised and attracted up to 5,000 spectators. Trophies are awarded to the individual divers and teams who caught the largest animals. Afterwards, the octopuses were either eaten, given to a local aquarium, or returned to the sea.
So back in the old days, before people were playing WoW, they were playing WoW. World Octopus Wrestling.
111 divers took part in the World Octopus Wrestling Championship. A total of 25 giant Pacific octopuses were captured that day, ranging from 4 to 57 pounds.
Holy cow.
How awesome of a movie would this be? You
all
be like,
period,
you're aquatic real steel.
Yes, yes. Here's
from Time Magazine. Merely to minnow about underwater is no longer enough, and such sports as octopus wrestling are coming increasingly into vogue, particularly in the Pacific Northwest, where the critters grow up to 90 pounds and can be exceedingly tough customers. Although there are several accepted techniques for octopus wrestling, the really sporty way requires a human diver to go without artificial breathing apparatus.
Yeah.
H. Allen Smith wrote an article for Truth Magazine in 1964, collected in Low Man Rides Again, about a gentleman named O'Rourke, whom he dubs the father of octopus wrestling. According to information Smith collected from Idwall Jones and other sources, O'Rourke and a partner developed a business in the late 1940s of fishing for octopuses, with O'Rourke serving as live bait and his partner hauling him out of the water after an octopus was sufficiently wrapped around him. Quote, all this while O'Rourke was becoming perhaps the world's greatest authority on the thought processes and personalities of the octopus. He knew how to outmaneuver them, outflank them, and how to outthink them. He knew them full well many years ago that what today's octopus wrestlers are just beginning to learn, that it's impossible for a man with two arms to apply full Nelson on an octopus. He knew full well the futility of trying for a crotch hold on an opponent with eight crotches.
By the way, you know that about octopi, they have eight penises, right? And that female octopi, their vagina is the same orifice as their mouth or their beak. And the way they have sex, this is all what I read from Omni magazine in the late 80s. So correct.
Sure,
you know, get mad at Bob Guccione if I'm wrong. But what I read was that the male will sneak up and just sort of try to be like, ha ha, we're having sex. And if the female's okay with it,
that's
she's
my
like,
line.
All right, whatever. But if not, then she's like, chomp. Bite that off, and the dude's like, well, I got seven left, and off he goes.
There is an awesome image here for octopus wrestling is my hobby.
Okay, can I Google this right now?
Go to Wikipedia, look up octopus wrestling, and it's in the links below.
All right, octopus wrestling. Gotcha. And it's in the links below. Octopus wrestling is my hobby. And oh my god. You're talking about like that image right there?
Yes. We're looking at like this. Now the octopus they catch are much smaller, but the
are
image
you sure?
is this
smaller
person
than that?
Being, you know, tangling with something the size of a VW bug.
How big? Okay, so here's my question to you guys. Let's say we get captured by space aliens, and they say, greetings, weird things.
You each have to battle a octopus. Whoever defeats the largest octopus will go free. Whoever, you know, whoever is able to stalemate with an octopus and survive will be able to go home free. But whoever, but the third person will die at the hands of an octopus.
Jesus, mushmouth aliens. Pick a word and say it.
So the question is, like, let's say in a situation where we're all playing against each other, right? And whoever defeats the largest octopus will go home scot-free. Second place is you remain a thrall to the alien. Third place is you die at the hands of an octopus. How big an octopus do you think you could
take?
Sounds
like a dirty joke. How big of an octopus do we try to get?
What do you? Yeah, yeah. Now keep in
mind.
So
we have to find or select our own size octopus, but with the idea being that it has to be big enough that it will be bigger than the other guys.
Exactly.
But,
so it's game theory.
But small enough that you could beat it.
Right, exactly. And now keep in mind, now privately in your own mind, make your own decision. Make your own existing animal that you can relate it to. And then we'll reveal how big we went that we think we could defeat or at least survive.
All right, I got mine. Mine's locked in.
All right, Andrew?
I'm going last.
I got mine.
Okay. I'll go first, and I'm probably going to die. I'm going to play it safe because I suspect there's a strong possibility that I will die at the hands of an octopus. So I'm going to do mine about the size of a... of a Westie Terrier, you know, somewhere around 15 pounds or so. About, I don't know, I'm looking at the bulk of it right now. I'm going to say it's around 18, maybe 2 feet. 2 feet, you know, at the bulk, and then the tendrils going out another foot on each side. I think there's a good chance that even if this thing, like, full-on wrapped its arms around me and beaks started gnawing at my heart, I'm pretty sure I'd survive because I could just go bum, 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 and beat it off. Andrew?
My strategy is this. I'm counting on adrenaline to help me out if I can't befriend the beast and get him on my side.
There's
to overthrow
no chance
our alien
of
overlords,
you befriending
okay?
him. He will kill you.
Everyone's right, strategy right. to their own, Brian.
Okay, fair enough, fair yeah. enough.
This is my plan. I've done research on this, Brian.
Oh, have you?
I've looked to see what the world record was for octopus wrestling because, you know, there is such a thing as the World Octopus Wrestling Championships. Not a Jim or a Vince McMahon, rather, sport. Maybe a Jim McMahon sport, not a Vince McMahon sport or sports entertainment. So based upon that, I'm counting on a rush of adrenaline. All right. Not unlike the rush of ink out of an octopus. Going through my body and giving me superhuman simian strength so that I can defeat the octopus. So I'm going to pick the winning, the highest weight they had, which in that apparently here was 57 pounds. I'm going for a 57 pounder, Brian.
How big is that? Do you have any idea? You just went for whatever was the highest.
There's a photo of that if you go to octopus wrestling on Wikipedia. And you see right. these three gentlemen laughing merrily in their dive suits as they hold on to a 57-pound octopus.
I'm going to go find that right now. All right, and Justin?
You're just saying you max out on what anybody has ever conceivably wrestled.
I think I can do that. I think I'll be able to do it.
I'm almost
back
certain,
against the wall.
I'm almost certain you die. I'm almost certain you die in that
Brian,
situation.
Brian... I will agree with you on that bet. I think you are correct, but
but that's still what you're going for. What about you, Justin?
Well, I even forget. I don't even know how you pronounce this, but I would go for one the size of a beluga whale.
What's a beluga whale?
Like a really big whale.
Bigger, as big as a whale?
I would try to wrestle that because I'm not as tall as Andrew or in as good a shape as Brian, which means there's a 98% chance I'm dying. So you might as well make him go through the You know, like, well, how do you know they make whales that or they make octopuses that big? They got to go search. They got to breed a gigantic octopus that hopefully crashes through and murders everybody on
board. So your whole thing is to sit there in your cell snacking on turtle shells, and they're all like, how big an octopus do you want? You're like 80 feet tall. And they're like, well, yeah, they don't have one. You're like, well, you better get one.
It's like, well, I mean, listen, you guys made up this gambit. I'm going to cash it in. I want a whale-sized octopus, and I'll beat it, too. You watch me.
And so your whole ploy is you get, like, 20 years in prison as they breed a super octopus. Yes. And then finally, you go out, like, in a massive pay-per-view event that the entire octopus overlords are watching.
Yes. And I'm surely murdered, and then hopefully it crashes through its tank and murders everybody else on board.
Oh, that's great. That is a great idea. I love this.
I have found a video of octopus wrestling.
Shut up. Send it to me instantly on the link.
Just do wrestling octopus in Google video search.
Video.google.com, right?
What's that?
Video.google.com.
I just did video search, so.
Octopus wrestling?
Yep.
How to wrestle an octopus? The art of octopus wrestling? What do you think? Which one?
Yep. Oh, how to wrestle an octopus. The Japanese explain how to win a fight with an octopus.
This is it. This is as seen on Live Leak.
So we're watching this now for our audio listeners. You can go to the link. Just do how to wrestle an octopus.
Everything, obviously, in Japanese. But what we're looking at, this octopus, by the way, like maybe one quarter of the size that I said I would go up against. And for the record, I had the smallest of all the octopi we discussed.
Well, which one? I mean, there's the one in the tank and the small one they just had, I think.
How big is the one in the tank?
Look at the bigger tank.
Oh, dear.
Brian says the one that he's going up against is bigger than that. There's a guy getting into the tank right now.
I don't know.
He stepped in.
Like I said,
biker shorts.
I said about the size of a Westie in the center with long tendrils on the outside. Oh my god! This guy can stand up and get out of the water. He's gonna wrestle this thing.
He's wrestling.
No way! You know this is a terrible idea.
The octopus is like kind of just asleep in the tank. He's like, all right, what's going on?
He's like,
on?
What are you kids up to?
I'd also like to think that this is Japanese public.
Oh
television.
My God, this is awesome. The guy's on the ground now, and he's got, it's like a face hugger, but much more massive, and it's all over him. This is disgusting. This is absolutely horrific.
Oh my God, we just caught up with you. Holy crap, it's totally killing him. It's grabbing his junk. Why is he not punching it?
I think he's kind of getting... Maybe he's enjoying it.
Okay, maybe we're asking the wrong question. What would it take?
The suckers are sticking so hard into his skin. I mean, it's like they go to try to pull one off, and the skin is just peeling away. I mean, it's not like ripping off, but he's biting. He's going to try to eat the thing.
He's got hickeys. Okay, maybe we're asking the wrong question. What would it take for you to... Oh, my God, he really is biting the thing. He's getting him to release. Maybe the question is, what would it take for you to get to make out with an octopus?
Kind of think it's the same thing, Brian.
Oh, my God!
Oh, good God.
This is horrific, ladies and gentlemen. This may be the most frightening thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And, of course, it's on Japanese TV.
Oh, my God. All right, well, so now you know. In case you were wondering how to fight an octopus or how to succumb to your octopus overlords, now you know.
SNY Walker, that is your new prime directive. Follow him on Twitter at SNY Walker. Refusal to follow at SNY Walker will result in head explosion. By way of tiny dynamite sticks baked into cakes at SNY Walker.
So you guys want to do some recommendations?
Oh my god, I'm so disturbed.
It is disturbing. You know that kind of joke about that comes from a certain country.
I'm so confused because, like, on the one hand, we're obviously
confused, Brian.
Well, I mean, a little bit, but because it's like we're trying to portray a horrific scenario, and it turns out they're doing that live in Japan, and it's like I feel lame now.
Welcome to Weird Things, as we like to call things that are going on in Japan right now.
We're just going to call it Japan Things from now on. Let's do some picks. What do you guys got?
Hey, how about this? We were talking about smartest species on the planet. Well, as has already been explained, humans are the third most intelligent, with dolphins being the second. And that is all for you in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is really, really amazing. The book, I remember when I first read the book, I like destroyed it because I was super late to it. I was actually reading the book before I went and reviewed the movie that came out, but I sat down for my morning coffee and in college, and I wound up skipping all my classes and just reading the whole book because it was awesome and amazing. I just drank 4 cups of coffee like a weirdo in the basement of this coffee shop. And it's super awesome. If you haven't read it, then read it. But 90% of everybody's read it, so just read it again.
Andrew?
I'm going to make a movie pick, which I am prone to doing. Saw this last night with my dad. I went in with my expectations where I just wanted to have fun and see giant robots beat each other up.
Damn it, you stole my recommendation. Go ahead.
Well, we could both have the recommendation and talk about why we liked it.
I still haven't seen it, but that's what I really wanted to see. In fact, my recommendation was going to be to tell everyone else to go see it and tell me if I should go see it. Was it good?
So we're talking about Real Steel, and understand it's a kid's movie. Go into their understanding this is a movie designed for a 10-year-old. You know, it's not like super dumb, but it's like people go, it's kind of cliched and this. Yes.
Of course it is. Yes.
But giant robots beating each other up. The effects I thought were fantastic. The story was great. I enjoyed it. I liked it, you know, and I very much enjoyed watching. I want a sequel. I thought it was just a really, really neat concept, and I thought it was very well done. And so I really enjoyed it. Had a lot of fun in Real Steel. Everybody in the theater enjoyed it. I know there are going to be people like, oh, come on, robots beating each other up. Yes. Yes. So that's my pick, Real Steel.
Okay, I'm going to do a switcheroo then. And for anyone who listens to Frame Rate, you'll be totally unsurprised by my pick. But it's timely only because it's on Netflix instant streaming right now. The whole world is a little bit abuzz about a little show called Breaking Bad, which I believe in the past I've told you guys how much I loved the TV show The Shield. And The Shield is very curious in that the main character of The Shield from the very first episode, the pilot, is sort of damned from the very beginning. They take somebody who you sympathize with the whole first episode and then suddenly very much do not sympathize with him. And they spend the entire rest of the series torturing you in trying to make this character sympathetic again. Breaking Bad is the exact opposite in that you start with a massively sympathetic character who the rest of the series you are tortured into trying to make unsympathetic. And it's just as good. Those may be my two favorite television experiences of all time, and Breaking Bad is currently available. There's a ton of science content, and there's even some poignant philosophical questions that get raised over the course of the series. It's all on instant streaming right now. Head on over, watch Breaking Bad.
There you go. Well, boys and ghouls, this has been the Weird Things podcast. It's been very, very weird. We've made ourselves all feel a little bit uncomfortable. You're not the only ones. And thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. It's been weird.
Bye.
All hail your octopus overlords.
If you would like to sponsor this podcast, please go to weirdthings.com /sponsor to buy your listener sponsorship spot, saying whatever you want.